You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume Number 27, by Rudolf Steiner and Dr. Ita Wegmann, entitled Extending Practical Medicine, formerly known as Fundamentals of Therapy, translated by Anna Moise. This is Chapter 3, The Phenomena of Life. Understanding of the healthy and sick human organism will not be gained if we imagine that the activity of some substance taken in with the food simply continues to act in the inner organism the way it did in outside nature. It is not a matter of the activity we observe the substance to have outside the human organism continuing on, but of it being overcome. The mistaken notion that substances from the outside world continue to act in their specific way inside the organism arises because that seems to be the case if one thinks in the way people usually do in chemistry. Having done their investigations, they believe that hydrogen, for instance, is the same in the organism as in outside nature, because it is found in the food and drink we take, and then again in our elimination products, air, sweat, urine, feces, and in secretions such as bile. People do not feel the need today to ask what happens to the substance presenting as hydrogen before it enters into the organism and once it has been eliminated. They do not ask, what does the substance presenting as hydrogen go through in the organism? In raising the question, one immediately feels the need to direct attention to the difference between the sleeping and the waking organism. The nature of a sleeping organism, in terms of matter or substance, does not provide a basis on which conscious and self-aware experiences can evolve. It does, however, provide a basis for life to evolve. In this respect, a sleeping organism differs from a dead one. In the latter, the material basis no longer provides for life. We shall be unable to gain further understanding as long as we consider the difference to lie merely in a different composition of substances in a dead and a living organism. Almost half a century ago, the distinguished physiologist Émile Dubois-Raymond pointed out that conscious awareness will never be explained in terms of how substances act. He said people would never understand why it should not be a matter of indifference to a specific number of carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, and hydrogen atoms, how they are, were, and will be positioned, and why, with their change in position, they cause a human being to feel. I see red, I smell the scent of roses. This being the case, Dubois-Raymond said, people using the natural scientific approach would never be able to explain the waking human being, who is full of feelings and sensations, but only the sleeping human being. He was under an illusion in taking this view. He believed that the actions of substances gave rise to the phenomena not of consciousness, but of life. In reality, however, we have to say the same for the phenomena of life, as Dubois-Raymond did for those of conscious awareness. Why should it occur to a number of carbon, oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen atoms to produce the phenomena of life through the way they were, are, or will be positioned? observation has shown that the phenomena of life have a completely different orientation from those that occur in the lifeless sphere. For the latter, we may say, they show themselves to be governed by forces that radiate from the essential nature of the substance, from the relative center of the periphery. The phenomena of life show matter to be governed by forces that act from outside in, toward the relative center. In the transition to life, matter must withdraw from the outward radiating forces and make itself part of those that radiate in. Every substance, and also every process on earth, has its forces that radiate out from the earth and holds them in common with the earth. It is the kind of substance chemists see merely as a constituent part of the earth's body. Entering into the sphere of life, it has to cease being merely part of the earth. It goes beyond having things in common with the earth. It is included in a sphere of forces that radiate toward the earth from the world beyond the earth that is all around. Seeing a substance or process evolve as life, we have to think of it as withdrawing from the forces that act on it as though from the center of the earth, and entering into the sphere of other forces that do not have a center but a periphery. They act from all directions, those forces, as though aiming for the center of the earth. They would have to dissolve all that is matter on earth into utter formlessness, tearing it apart, if the influences of the heavenly bodies from beyond the earth's sphere did not enter into the space in which these forces are active and modify the dissolution. We can observe this if we study plants. In plants, earth substances are lifted out of the sphere of earth activities. They go in the direction of formlessness. This transition to formlessness is modified by the actions of the sun and similar effects from the cosmos. If these are not taken effect or acting in a different way, for example, during the night, the forces that substances have in common with the earth come alive in them again. Plant nature develops in the interaction of earthly and cosmic forces. If we call the whole sphere of forces that are under the earth's influence the, in quotes, physical, we shall need another name for the very different nature of the forces that do not radiate from the earth but radiate in toward it. Here, an aspect of the human organization, which we discussed in the previous chapter, shows itself in a different light. In accord with an earlier usage that has been thrown into confusion under the influence of more recent physics-oriented thinking, we called this part of the human organism the etheric. We shall have to say that the etheric is active in plant nature, that is, in the sphere that presents as life. Insofar as the human being is a living entity, this etheric is also active in him. Yet, even with regard to mere phenomena of life, there is a significant difference compared to plant nature. The plant allows the physical to be active in it when the etheric from cosmic space no longer takes effect, as is the case when the sun ether ceases to take effect during the night. Man only allows the physical to be active in his body in death. During sleep, the phenomena of conscious awareness and self-awareness vanish. The phenomena of life continue, however, even when the sun ether is not actively at work in cosmic space. The plant is, throughout its life, taking in the ether forces radiating down onto the earth. Man has them inside himself in an individualized form, even in his embryonic period. Thus, man takes out of himself what the plant receives from the world, because he received it for his further development when still in his mother's womb. A power that is truly cosmic in origin, designed to act by radiating down onto the earth, is acting out of lung or liver. It has metamorphosed its direction. We therefore have to say that human beings have the etheric in them, and that it is individualized. The physical has been individualized in the form of the physical body and of its organs, and so has the etheric. Human beings have a distinct ether body and a distinct physical body. During sleep, this ether body remains connected with the physical body, giving it life. It only separates from it in death. The end of chapter 3.